This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Yeah, Rabbi Shabbos, it's a very special pleasure and privilege to welcome my brother, Rabbi Foyle, to South Africa. He's been in Eretz Yisrael for many years and will be with us for a short period over Pesach. He'll be giving the Shabbos HaGodol Shir next week, next Shabbos, at an hour before Mincha, at about 4:15. The Motzei Shabbos Shir next week will start at 7 o'clock. From next week we'll start at 7. We're running late this evening, which won't be usual. And on Chol HaMoed, Shabbos Chol HaMoed, there won't be a Matzah Shabbos Shir. Those are the announcements. The Ribbono Shelam has strange ways. You remember I told you a story that they were cleaning out my study, and that all the notes that I'd put in, all the pieces of paper that I'd put in, all the Marim HaKlomis that I needed, the maid who was cleaning them out took them all out and kept them all very neatly for me, so in case I would be looking for them. And that was supposed to be last week's Matzah Shabbos Shir, and so we had to go into something else last week. This week it all came back into place, but it came out as it was coming back into place that we had to have last week's Shir first. That the Seder was such that we had to first do what we did last week, otherwise we wouldn't really have fully understood or fully appreciated. Understand? One can understand what we're doing this week. Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thank you. The shir is not a difficult shir, but it's on a difficult subject. And it was for that reason that I introduced you to the subject already last night, so that you would have an opportunity to think about it and to consider it and to become familiar with it. Last night I showed you a very fascinating Rashi, and I want to take that one little step further and then to move on to the Ikar Advarim, onto the main things. We discussed last week and again last night the concept of psoriasis, this kind of disease, this apparent change in color that can affect the human skin, also being capable of affecting the walls of a house. And the din is that if a man, even if he's a great Talmid Chochem, sees such a stain, such a coloring on his house, and he suspects, or in the case of a Talmid Chochem, even knows that it is tzaraas, he can't paskin it himself, he has to go to the Kohen, and is to say, I saw something which looks to me like a nega, and he's then instructed to empty out the house. After the house is empty, the Kohen comes, and he closes the house for 7 days. And depending on the development of that stain during the 7 days, that's how the Kohen is going to decide whether the house is really tomei or not. Why must the house be emptied? So Chazal say in the Torah Kohenim, it has to be emptied so that the contents will not become tome, because the din is further on in the Chumash that anything inside the house during those 7 days becomes tome. Asks Rashi, what's so terrible if it becomes tome? If it's metal objects which become tome, you'll put them in the mikveh. If it's food which became tome, you'll eat them when you're tome. There's no major loss. The only thing that you lose, he says, is the clay cheres. Oh, the cheap kelim, the pottery things, they can't be, one cannot be metaya them again, one cannot cleanse them again once they've become tome. So in order that one should not have to throw them out, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is concerned about not causing an undue loss of money, in order that you should not have to throw them out, the din is you must take them out before the Kohen comes. And we asked last night, who are you fooling? A Talmid Chochem sees a nega. He knows that it's the nega which is tzaraas. He knows it's a real tomedik nega. Just he has to go through the procedure of calling in the Kohen. So quickly, before the Kohen comes, the Torah says, take out the kelim. By the time the Kohen comes and closes, the kelim will be out. But they were in the house when the nega was there. So we explained the yesod in these halachas, that until the Kohen declares the house tome, the house is not tome. And we said this is a case where we see that halachic decisions are not necessarily based only on mitzius, on facts of life, on physical concepts. And that there can be such a thing, there are times when you can have a halachic mitzius separate from a physical mitzius. For example here, physically the stone is on the house. Nothing changes in the stain when the Kohen comes. The only thing that changes is the Kohen coming and saying, Tomei. That's all that changes. The declaration.
But the stain is the same. So the house before the Kohen said Tomei was Tohu, and after he says Tomei, it's Tomei. What changed? Nothing physically changed. The only thing that changed was the declaration of the Kohen. So you see, halachic status can change, although physically there's been no change at all. And it's that concept that we're going to take further. And we asked, what will happen if a person would say, look, I'm not a poor man, I can easily replace my pottery utensils. What do I need to get involved? If it is Tomei, it isn't Tomei, let me leave it in the house. If it's Tomei, so it's Tomei. If it's Father, then I'll get new ones. We would tend to think that such a man is a tzaddik. He's very meticulous about the laws of Tumah. And Tova Alav Brocha, he should be praised. But the truth is, it's not like that. The truth is that there's a din, one has to take the kelim out. And the reason for that, not the reason for it, but what emerges from it is that if he wouldn't take them out, he would be denying this very concept. Why aren't you taking it out? Because it's already been in the house and there's a nigger on the outside and what do I want to get involved? The answer is, until the Kohen comes, there's nothing, no tumah at all. There's no mitzvah to throw the kelim out, because there's nothing at all wrong with it. That's what halacha paskens. But he'll say, the fact is, there's a nega. And if the Kohen will come and say that this is in fact a tomedik nega, it's a nega which causes tumah, when did the nega come? The nega was there on Sunday, the Kohen came on Wednesday. On Monday and Tuesday my kelim were in the house. Who wants to get involved with such things? Rather out. The answer is no. That demonstrates that you believe that it's Metzius which fixes the halacha. You believe that it's the facts which fix the halacha. That's not so. It's the halacha which fixes the facts. It's only after the Kohen comes and he says Tomei, only then does it actually become Tomei, not before. This is actually used in halacha, this concept. There is a machloikes Ra'o and Rashbo in Hilchos Nido. As you know, a married woman has to predict the times of the onset of her vesis as far as halachically she can. And one of the dates that she uses is the day of the month. In other words, if she had a vesis on a certain day in Tishrei, when that same day in Cheshvan comes, she has to be careful and she has to observe certain halachas. Other dates she has to watch as well, but that's one of the dates. The Ra'o says it's got nothing to do with a calendar. The physiology of a woman doesn't know what's going on with a calendar. Does the physiology of a woman know if Beis Din decided to make this month 30 days long, or they decided to make it 29 days long? Is she going to go by the calendar? Says the Ra'o, she has to go by how many days it is after the Moilad, after the astronomical Rosh Chodesh, not the halachic Rosh Chodesh. So if a Vesis in Tishrei was 3 days exactly, let's say 3 times 24 hours after Rosh Chodesh, after the astronomical Rosh Chodesh of Tishrei, then 3 days after the astronomical Rosh Chodesh of Cheshvan, that's when she has to worry. That's how the Ra'o passes. The Rashbo says no. The Rashbo says once Beis Din have decided that it's Rosh Chodesh, then all the laws of physics regarded as Rosh Chodesh too, is Rosh Chodesh too. And the whole world, the whole Bria actually adjusts itself to the Rosh Chodesh of Beis Din, even if it doesn't coincide accurately with the Rosh Chodesh of the Moilad, with the actual astronomical Rosh Chodesh. This Birkas HaChodesh, when Stanley announced the Moilad, everybody, there was this hush of silence and everybody wanted to check on Stanley, because the Moilad was a long time before the actual time of Rosh Chodesh. Happens sometimes. Happens that the actual day of Rosh Chodesh doesn't tie in exactly with the astronomical days for various halachic reasons. But it has to be that way. The chiddush of the Rashbo is that various physical laws that affect halacha and are dependent on Rosh Chodesh, on the new moon, they now follow the halachic Rosh Chodesh, not the astronomical Rosh Chodesh. It's an amazing chiddush, but it's the same concept that goes here. And the strange thing is, we paskin like the Rashbo, not like the Ra'o. We paskin like that. That's how we do. That's how we handle every month. And it's that concept which we're going to examine this evening. The Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Gimel asks the question that bothers every Baal Tshuva. and many people who've been in it all their lives too. People sitting around, Talmidei Chachamim sitting around, some say Tomei, some say Kosher, some say Trof, some say Mutter, some say Osu. Who's right? And the answer is, it's all Nisnumi Roye Echod, it all comes from one shepherd. Kulom Parnos Echod Amorom Mipi Odoin Kol Hamaisim. All this was said by one Ribbono Shel Olam. Shenemar, it says, Vayedaber Elokim es kol hadvorim ha'ele leimor. And the Ribbono Shel Olam spoke all these things saying. What does all it say? The Ribbono Shel Olam spoke these things saying. What does all mean? So Chazal learns, Shafilu divrei meisheloi higia el ho'emes, hakol nitan b'sinai, says the Ran. Even those chidushim, those halachic conclusions and thoughts which do not get to the truth, which are learned correctly, and we must throughout the shir now distinguish between getting to the truth and learning correctly. We're not talking about people who just don't know how to learn. We're not talking about people, as Rav Ezrahi was talking earlier, who think crookedly. We're not talking about people who don't have the background with which to reach conclusions, or the knowledge to do so, and the understanding to do so. We're talking where a person has done the best he can and he's qualified, but he doesn't get to the emes, he doesn't get to the truth. That is included in that which it says, Vayadaber Elokim es kol advorim ha'ele leimor. The Ribbono Shel Olam spoke all these things, including the views of people like whom we don't paskin, including the dissenting opinions, including the views which are even maybe not the emes, which are not the truth. But if they're all worked out in the process of Torah reasoning, that was part of what the Ribbono Shel Olam taught. And the Ran says in his seventh drosha that that's the understanding, that we're told that the whole Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Even Mashe Talmid Vosik Asid L'Chadesh, Mashe Sofim Asidim L'Chadesh, even things which are going to be said in the Beis HaMedrash in centuries to come, all that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Sinai. And the Gemara says that it includes machloikis, it includes when they're differing opinions, all included. Says the Ran, and this is terribly important, what we're dealing with tonight are some basic concepts, and I introduced it to you last night by saying that I'm very disturbed about certain inaccuracies of thinking and hashkofa which somehow exist in the Beis HaMedrash at the moment, about which I'm very, very worried. Because they're yesodistic, they're things which actually affect the very pillars on which Yiddishkeit stands, on which Torah stands. And these are things we're dealing with this evening. Heim ha-machlekes v'chilukei ha-svoros shebein chachmei Yisrael. This is referring to the differences of opinion and the differing logics which exist between the chachomim of Israel. V'chulom londom Moshe mipi ha-gvura. And all of them, Moshe Rabbeinu learned from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Beis Hillel says this, and Beis Shammai says that. Moshe learned both of them. Rabbi Akiva says this, and Rabbi Meir says that. Beis Shammai learned both of them. Abaya says this, and Rabbu says that. Moshe Rabbeinu learned both of them from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But he learned it, says the Ran, Beloi hachro kol machlekes u'machlekes bifrat. Without the decision of each difference of opinion. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't pass him. When he taught it to him, he taught it. This is one view, and this is another view. And there were no decisions, there were no conclusions. Anything which was going to depend on a major machlokes in years to come, anything which revolved around a major difference of opinion among Chachmei Yisrael in years to come, the Ribbono Shel Olam presented the two opinions and left it without a decision. Aval bat. Can't leave Moshe Rabbeinu like that. He gave him a rule by which the truth can be established, can be known. The who, and that is, Achare Rabim Lahatos, you must follow the majority, which means, by the way, the majority of Talmidei Chachomim, not the majority of the masses. We don't take votes among the populace on these issues. But when Talmidei Chachomim debate an issue, at the end, when a Beis Din debates an issue, at the end we have to go by the Rabbin, by the majority. We're instructed not to depart one iota from the instructions that the Chachamim give us. I gave a shiur on that just a few weeks ago. And then to follow the Mesoires, the tradition which the Chachamim give us. And when there was many machlokes between many chachomim, im hayo yochid etzarabim, if there was an individual against the majority, hayo kovim halocha kedivrei amerubim, they used to fix the halocha like the majority. V'rabim etzarabim or yachid etzayochid. And what happens if it was 50 one way and 50 another way, or one way and one another way? There was no majority. Kefi hanire lechachme hador hahu. And it was left to those chachomim of that generation to fix it in accordance with their own understanding of the issues. Shekvar nimsaro ha'achro Elohim, because the decision-making process was handed over to them. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam made no decisions in Sinai. Where there was machlokes, he taught the machlokes, and he taught the method by which the machlokes has to be paskened. But the use of that method is handed down to human beings. The use of that method is handed down to the Chachomim of every generation. They must use the method which Moshe Rabbeinu learned, and using that method they must reach their own conclusions. That's how it has to be. How do we sit today and decide a machlokes between Gedolei Yisrael? How did they sit in the time of the Gemara and decide to paskin on a machlokes in the time of the Mishnah? How did they learn and sit in the Mishnah and decide to paskin a machlokes in an earlier time? The answer is that has also been given the right to the Chachmei Hador, to the Chachomim of that generation, even to paskin the halacha of earlier and greater generations. If it hasn't yet been paskined, if it hasn't yet been concluded, and they're the first generation that need to conclude it, and all they've got is the writings and the teachings of the previous generations, then using the methods given to Moshe on Sinai, which includes following the majority and various other principles, using those principles they have to make their own decisions. Venitztavinu lelech achar haskamosam, and we are instructed to go after their decision. Hen shiyas, one moment, I'll come to that in a moment. We are instructed to go after their decision by the Torah. And the Ran holds, therefore, that every law of the rabbis is in fact a law of the Torah, because it's the Torah that instructs us to follow the laws of the rabbis, to follow the Takonos Chachomim as well. Hein shiaskimu le'emes oy lehefchoy. And here says the Ran a mind-shattering concept: whether their decision is true or the opposite. He doesn't say or false. He says whether their decision is true or the opposite of the truth. It doesn't matter. We are chayav to follow their decision. That's what the Ran says. Now, based on this, the Ran then explains some very difficult Gemaras. And we'll deal with two of them. The one we've dealt with many times before, and you know the Gemara. The famous Gemara in Bava Metzia. The discussion involved a particular kind of avana, tonerachnoi. What is a tonerachnoi? A tonerachnoi was an oven that was made of separate parts. It was a collapsible oven. It was a sort of a travelling oven. And the various parts were not joined together with nuts and bolts or with any kind of fixing material. There was just sand between them. They were heavy pieces. It was like blocks. They just put one on top of the other. And the whole thing could be taken to pieces. And the question was whether it could be mekabel tuma or not, whether this thing could become tome or not if something tome was placed inside it. Do we consider it as a whole lot of broken pieces that just happen to be lying in a particular pattern, in which case we would not have to, it would not be mekabel tuma? Or do we say it's now a working oven, it's a kli, this is the way that it goes together? And there was a bitter machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the other Chachomim of his time. Says the Gemara, Ba'oisai Hayoim, on that day, Heishiv Rabbi Eliezer Kol Tshuva Shabailo. Rabbi Eliezer gave all the answers in the world. The Lo Kiblu Emenu, and they didn't accept it. Omalim, in desperation, he was so sure that he was right. He said to them, Im Halacha Kemoisi Chruv Ze Yechiach. There was a carrot tree there. He said, let the carrot tree prove that I'm right if the halacha is like me. And the chruv, the carrot tree, jumped up and it moved 100 amas, about 150 feet. And it got replanted there where it was. I said to him, what kind of business is this? We're sitting in the base of Medrash and you're bringing proofs from a carob tree. What kind of place is this? They were totally unimpressed and totally unmoved. Can you imagine what would happen to us? Imagine the maisalach that people would say. They tell all these stories that people do and people get very impressed by it. Just imagine if somebody asked the kasha in the shir and I said to them, look, a very good kasha you're asking, but I know that I'm right. And he said, how do you know that you're right? I said, let that shtender there prove it. And the shtender at that moment jumped up and moved 150 feet and went down. Can you imagine the stories they would tell around Johannesburg after that? Can you imagine how packed the Motor Shabbos here would be next week? Can you just imagine what there would be? Can you imagine the pressure on me that there would be to give a Motor Shabbos here on Chol HaMoed Pesach as well? They were totally unmoved. I mean, through some carob trees, what kind of longness is this? Amalayim, he said to them, let this river prove it. And the river started flowing backwards. Now you bring water from rivers. What's with you? He said, okay, you want to bring a raya from the Beis HaMedrash itself? You don't like rayas from outside the Beis HaMedrash? Good. Let the walls of this Beis HaMedrash prove that I'm right. He took out the Beis HaMedrash lipo. And the wall started collapsing. Goab Bohem Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua shouted at the walls. Omalem, he said, in Talmidei Chachomim, menatzchim zeh zeh ba'alocha, atem ma'atifche. Imagine that. Imagine, I said, no, let the walls prove, and the walls started collapsing. And then one of you said, hey walls, if we're busy arguing, what's it got to do with you? And the walls stop. Imagine then what the place would look like next week. They didn't carry on falling because of the honor of Rabbi Yeshua, and they didn't come up right out of honor of Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer were the main Bali Plukta in this. And still till this day, the day when the Gemara was written, you can go to that Beis HaMedrash and you would see the walls caved in. Good, he says. From a carrot tree you won't take a proof. From a river you won't take a proof. From the walls of the Beis HaMedrash you won't take a proof. There's only one thing left to me. You take a proof from God Himself. And He said, "Im halacha kamoisi, if the halacha is like me, min hashamayim yoichichu, may the Ribbono shel Olam prove it from heaven." Immediately, yotzes or basku, a heavenly voice came. And in those days there was no radio or television, so nobody could interpret that it was anything else. It was a plain and simple, clear basku, a voice from heaven. The Omro, and it said, Malachem etzer Rabbi Lozer, Shalach Kamoisu b'kol mokum. What's with you with Rabbi Lezer? Leave him alone. Don't you know that the Halacha is always like him? Omar Rabbi Yeshua Raglov. Rabbi Yeshua got up on his feet. And that phrase indicates a certain indignancy, a certain anger on the part of Rabbi Yeshua. Imagine what would happen in our society. People having a discussion, and the Ribbono Shel Olam comes and he decides it. Omer Rabbi Yeshua Raglov, he gets up onto his feet, the Omer, Loi Bashamayim, he is not in heaven, Torah. Shekvanisno Torah mehasina, in ana mashgichim bevasko. Torah has been given at Sinai, we don't have to pay any attention to heavenly voices. Before the Torah was given, maybe we would have to listen to heavenly voices, how else would we know? But now the Torah has been given to us at Sinai, we don't have to pay any attention to the basko. Now there are many difficulties and problems with this Gemara, and we've dealt with some of them in the past. The first question that we need to face is, so what does that mean? Was the Baskel wrong or was the Baskel right? The first thing. It says the Ram, the Baskel was right. The argument of Rabbi Yeshua is not, we don't have to listen to a Baskel because it might be wrong. The argument is not, we don't have to listen to a Baskel because who knows if it's genuine. The argument is, once the Torah was given, we don't listen to it. If it was before the giving of Torah, I would have listened to it, says Rabbi Yeshua. So there's nothing inherently wrong with a bus call, except there's something wrong with me listening to it. He says, that's not. Not once the Torah is given. So we have a major philosophical problem here. We have a halacha which is paskind against the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what it means. The Ribbono Shel Olam has told us in black and white, clear. How many times have I had people saying to me, "Ah, if only they knew for sure what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted of them." And I say, "What do you mean for sure? You would like a bas kol to come and tell you, do this, don't do that." Yeah, that's what they want. And I learned this Gemara with them. It wouldn't help if a bas kol came. You're not allowed to follow the bas kol. That's not how we make our decisions on the basis of a bas kol. There's a halacha on the basis of which you make a decision. The Ribbono Shel Olam comes out clear on black and white. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua paskins against God. That's it. And we follow Rabbi Yeshua. God and Rabbi Eliezer on the one side, Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachomim on the other, and we follow Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachomim in making decisions in God's Torah. What's going on? There's another Gemara which we haven't done before, which is on the surface equally weird. Listen to this one. Think you've heard strange things? Nothing yet. It's a story about Rabba. Have a Yassi Vagilda de Dikula. There's all stories that comes before, it doesn't matter. He was sitting at in a field, and he was sitting in a tree. The great Rabba, the Kog Goris, and he was learning. As he was learning, they were arguing upstairs in the Ribbono Shel Olam's Beis HaMedrash. Can you imagine, Rabbi? We had a little bit earlier, we had Rabbi Ezrachi speaking to us about the Bris Gerov. The Bris Gerov only passed away a few years ago, relatively. 20 years ago, was it 20 years? Less than that, 20 years ago. Our part of our generation. We had Rabbi Ezrachi explaining to us how it is totally beyond our imagination already to understand just even an image, a kind of a picture of who he was and what he was. It's already right beyond us, although it's only 20 years ago. So far are we from it already in those 20 years. Can one understand who a rabbi was? Rabbi Bar Nachmeni. He's sitting and learning and tuning in to a discussion taking place in the yeshiva of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What he's doing, eavesdropping on the yeshiva of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What were they learning? They were learning our sedras at the moment, with this whole thing with the tzaras. In boheres kodemes l'seah lovan tome. And they were learning the halacha that in deciding whether these color changes on the human body, this is on the skin, if they cause tumor or they don't, they learned the halacha that if first one finds the spot of color change on the skin, and thereafter a hair becomes white in that area, then tome. If it's the other way around, if first one sees the white hair and afterwards the skin color changes, then it's tome. Sofek. They asked the question in the yeshiva shomala, what will be the din if it's a sofek? We're not sure which came first. The kohen looks and he sees the hair is white and he sees the color change, but he has no way of establishing which happened first, what the chronological order was. So here there was a machlokes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Tohir. God said Tohir, it's okay, it's kosher. The Kulu Masivta Derakia, and everybody else in that yeshiva Omri Tomei, said Tomei. Imagine such a thing. What religion is there that tolerates a machlekes between the Chachomim and the Ribbono Shel Olam? What religion is there that knows how to swallow such a thing, that knows how to digest such a concept? We have it. Rabbi's tuning in, and that's what he hears. Sofek, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Tohir, V'kulu Mesita D'Rakia Amrei Tomei. God says it's Tohir, it's clear, and everybody else up there says it's Tomei. V'amri Man Noichach. So they're busy discussing. It's not so easy just to say follow the majority. After all, the minority happens to be God. So they decide, who's going to decide? Who can we appeal to? It's also not all that fair. Who's there above God that you can appeal to? It's an impossible situation. Halachically, we're going to tolerate this machlokes, but it needs to be resolved. Who's going to resolve it? So they answered, they agreed, Noichach Rabba Bar Nachmeni. He's tuning in. Can you imagine the terror? He's listening in. And they're discussing, and who should decide this? He must have been shocked at the machlokes altogether. There's the Ribbono Shel Olam saying Tohu, everybody else saying Tomei. Who's going to decide? There's a whole decision. Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, let him decide. The Omar Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, because Rabbi Bar Nachmeni has said, Ani yochid ben agoyim, ani yochid be'olis. I am the greatest expert in the goyim and in olis. He knew exactly who he was. That was his area of expertise. And he knew and he said that there is nobody else who has expertise in those areas such as he himself. And they were mekabel that upstairs. They accepted that in the Masivta Dirakia, that he was the expert to decide in the dispute between God and the rest of the world. So how are they going to get him? He's got to pass an opinion. That means he has to go upstairs, which means his days have come. A double shock for Rabbi Nachmani. Number one, he's going to have to pass in a rather difficult shaila, and number two, he's about to die. That's what he realizes. Shodru shlicho basrei, they sent a shliach to go and fetch Rabbi Nachmani. Lo ava matzi malach hamoves l'mikrovle. The malach hamoves, who was the shliach, couldn't get near him. Because he didn't stop learning, and as long as one is learning, as one is learning properly, the taharot, the Malach HaMoves can't come. At the hachi, as time went by, the Malach HaMoves is trying to find a way to get in the Rabbi Nachmani. Noshav zikr v'abish beni kani, a wind came and it made a noise among the reeds. Sovar gund de parshihu, so he thought it was a band of robbers or a band of policemen coming to get him. Omar tinach nafshi. Nafshi da'a gavra v'lo yimosu bide de malchusa. When he saw that, he'd rather let me go upstairs than to go be handed over to the government. Yeah. I'm prepared to die rather than to go into the hands of these bandits. He thought they were bandits. So at that moment, obviously, he stopped learning and the Malach HaMoves took him. Ki havako naicha nafshi. As he was dying, Omar, he said, Toher, Toher, he paskind against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Can you imagine that? On your way to stand before your Creator, on your way to stand before the Dayun HaEmes, the moment that we all dread, the moment that we all dread, he stands and he makes a decision, like the Ribbono Shel Olam, against Kula de Besifta Drakia. Yosef Basko, Omra Ashrecha Rabba Ba Nachmeni, Shiguf Chotoyev, Yosef Nishmoscha Betoyev. So Baskel comes out and says, you are praiseworthy, Rabbi Ba Nachmani, that you are Toher and your soul departed, you died while the word Toher was on your mouth. Says the Ran, talking about the Masivta Dirakia, Kihim Heyoisem Yoidim Shesofek Toher al Derech HaEmes, although they knew that in truth this doubt, the correct halachic psak was Toher, was Toher, they all paskind the opposite. Shemei achar shehachroros hatoyro nimsur lahem b'chayim, because since the decisions of Torah were handed down to them in their lives, v'sichlo mayom echayev l'tame, and their own logic with all their chokhmah required that they should make the that they should declare a tame, hoyo min haroi shiyeh tame, it is correct that it should be tame, afal pi shehu hefech min haemes. Even though it's the opposite of the truth, shekein mechayiv haseichel ha'enoshi, because that is what the human logic requires. Ve'omnam, and note, im yarbu ha'metami al Rabbo Bar Nachmani shayom metayer, if more chachomim paskin tome. Now we've got this Gemara, so now we've got to decide: is it tome or is it tome? So we have to take a vote among the chachomim. If most Chachomim hold Tome against the view of Rabbi Bar Nachmani, Afal Pishu Maskin Le'emes Yosei Mehem, although we now know, because we've had a little visit behind the curtains to what goes up on upstairs, we know that he, Rabbi Bar Nachmani, is closer to the truth. But the majority of Chachomim in our day Paskin Tome, Lo Yaseh Amru B'Maise L'Tayra Pisvorus HaYochid. The majority are not permitted to make a decision on the basis of the Yochid of Rabbi Bar Nachmani, even though he is the more correct one. Therefore the Torah instructed that the decision of the majority is the deciding one, and the individual is obligated to follow their decision, even though he knows that they don't agree with the truth. Exactly the same as the case of Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer was put into Cheirim for that. He knew that they were wrong. Doesn't matter. He's obligated to follow them. And he wasn't prepared to follow them, for that he was put into Cheirim. What does that mean? I pointed out to you that the Ran is careful to speak about the truth and the opposite. He doesn't speak about it being false, chas v'sholem. There's a reason for that. Certainly there is no intention that halacha should be able to lead us to conclusions which are against the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That wouldn't make any sense. Certainly the chosim of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the seal of the Ribbono Shel Olam, is emes. The Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to give us a Torah which leads us to conclusions of falsehood. So what does this all mean? What it means is that in deciding to give the Torah to the human being, the Ribbono Shel Olam made a major decision that concerns the future of emes. Not the past of emes, but the future of emes. The future of truth. And that is that in future truth would no longer be fixed by what it used to be. It would from now on be fixed by the decisions of Talmidei Chachomim on this world, using their own limited intellect, as limited as they are, because they're not God, and the Torah that was handed down in Sinai. That's how truth would be fixed. The Medrash says, Mekhtes HaChoshin in his Hagdomah explains the Medrash in this way. Omer Rabbi Simon in Bereshis Rabbah and Parshat Ches, at the moment when the Ribbono Shel Olam was about to create Adam Harishon, Nasu Maloche Hashores Kisim Kisim V'Chaburus Chaburus, the angels formed themselves into groups and into little separate classes and categories. Mehem Oimrim Al Yivro, Mehem Oimrim Yivro. Then another case. Can you imagine? There's the Ribbono Shel Olam sitting about to create man, and the angels are busy deciding whether he should or he shouldn't. And there was a debate. Some said yes and some said no. Hadu dichtiv, chesed ve'emes nifkushu tzedek v'sholem noshku. Chesed and emes, kindness and truth, met. Justice, righteousness and peace kissed one another. Chesed oimer yivara. Chesed said yes. Sure, you must create man. Shehu goymel chasodim. It will be wonderful. There will be chesed in the world. A man is capable of doing chesed. Without a human being, there can be no chesed in the world. Sure, you must create man. Ve'emes oimer al yivro. Emes, truth. And this is now God's absolute truth. Says, al yivro, don't allow man to be created. Shekulo shkorim, that's all lies. He's not capable of perceiving our level of emeskait. It's beyond the human intellect. Me'asu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Listen to the words carefully. Notal emes v'hishlichoi la'oretz. He took hold of emes and threw him down to the earth. Hadol dichtiv, that's what it means when it says v'tashlech emes arzo, and he threw truth down to the earth. Amru malochi ashoros itnei HaKadosh Baruch. The malochi ashoros, angels turned to Ribbono Shel Olam and they said, Ribbono Shel Olam, ma'ato mevazeh tachzis alich altichas yishloch. Your most precious medal, your most precious gem, emes, you've thrown out. What are you doing? Answers the Ribbono Shel Olam, Tale emes min ha'oretz. I want truth to evolve from the earth. I don't want to impose it from here. Hado dichtiv emes ve'oretz titzmach. That's what it means in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Truth will flower, will grow out of the earth. What does that mean? That every little Tom, Dick and Harry, every little Chaim and Shmerel can go and make his own decisions, and now it becomes emes. Chas v'sholem. The Ribbono Shel Olam would give a Torah which would be the Torah's emes. What does Torah's emes mean? It means the science of truth. That's what it means. The skills of truth, the teachings of truth. Not just a list of this is truth, now do it. No. The science of truth, the method of reaching truth. And we're going to adapt that a little bit, and we're going to say the method of determining truth. Determining not only in its sense of deciding, but determining in the sense of making a truth. Torah's emes is the Torah which is capable of determining emes. And what happens if the emes which that Torah determines is not the same as the previous ruling absolute emes, which our minds can't achieve, which is what the angels of emes were complaining about? How can you create a man who cannot achieve our emes? says God, then we'll go down to his MS. Doesn't matter. That's the MS I want to run the world by. I want to operate by the MS he works out, not by the MS I impose. I want to teach him how to work it out correctly. I want to give him all the skills he needs. I'll give him a mind, I'll give him a neshama, I'll give him a Torah, I'll give him everything he needs. But he has to make the decision, and we will bind ourselves by his decision. That's why the Gemara says, when the Malachim comes to the Rebbeinu Shimon, they say, when's Rosh Hashanah, when's Yom Kippur? He says, go and ask them. They'll decide downstairs. When they decide, that's the day we'll keep Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. A person eats on Yom Kippur, Chas V'Sholom, his Chayev Kores, one of the most terrible punishments that there is. Who decides when is Yom Kippur? Who decides on what day is Yom Kippur? Who makes that decision which is going to affect the lives in this world and the world to come of hundreds of thousands of millions of Yidden? Beis Din. The Chachomim decide. Today is Yom Kippur. By the way, they fix the months and they have certain discretion. They can decide which day Yom Kippur will fall on. And by that, the Ribbono Shel Olam decides who eats on that day will get Kores. The Ribbono Shel Olam totally commits himself to follow the decisions of the Chachom. Can you begin to see how idiotic it is when you find people who say, no, the laws of the Torah I'm prepared to accept. What the rabbis say, that's another thing. Who is he? Is he a step above God? God says, I'm prepared to follow what the rabbis say. That's what the Chachomim say, that's what will be. That's the emes. And Chaim Shmerel says, the laws of the Torah, yes, not what the Talmid of Chachomim say. Step above God is. Says the Ktzos HaChoshen, that is the meaning of the bracha we make every morning, and we say it's the bracha we make when we are called up to the Sefer Torah, the Birkas HaTorah, Asher Nosan Lonu Toras Emes, who gave us the Torah of Emes, who gave us the power of Emes through utilizing correctly the Ribbono Shel Olam's Torah. Now comes the second part of the shiur, which is only a few minutes, you don't need to worry. So why does the Ribbono Shel Olam play games with us? Good, okay, he's handed over to us. Why does he have to make Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer go through this terrifying experience of being confronted after all these miracles still with a baskel? What's the point? If the Torah has been handed down to human beings, so leave it finished. Don't interfere. Let them reach their own decision. What does a baskel have to come and support the wrong one even? If you've given the Torah, and that's what Rabbi Yeshua answers, he says, you've given Leib Shemayim, you've given us the Torah. If that's so, why even get involved? Rabbi Yeshua doesn't accuse the Ribbono Shel Olam of getting involved unnecessarily. He just says, we're not allowed to follow. In Mashgichim Bebasko. He doesn't say, Ribbono Shel Olam, you had no right to make a Basko. You can make what you want. We don't have to follow it. Well, if that's the case, why even make the Basko in the first place? What is the role played by this Basko? Why does the Gemara relate this whole thing to us? Why did Rabbi Bar Nachmani see this whole machlokes between the Ribbono Shel Olam and the Masifta Derakia? Why do we need to know these things? There's a Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon. Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon was not a Gaon. He was not one of the Gaonim. He was one of the very early Rishonim. He was one of those that bridged the gap between the Gaonim, the Tekufa, the period of the Gaonim, and the period of the Rishonim. And he was a Talmud of Rabbi Gaon. And this particular piece of Rav Nissim Gaon he introduces by saying that he's going to teach us Kefi Shelomadati Midivrei Adonainu Hai Gaon Zal. I'm going to teach it to you as I learned from my master Ravenu Hai Gaon. And although it's in Gemara Brochus Daf Yutes, he explains the whole sugya of the Tonu Rachnoi. This very case that we've just had of the Machlokes, Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yeshua, where the Ribbono Shel Olam involves himself in the Machlokes. At the end, he asks the obvious question, and he gives two answers. The only answer that we'll deal with this evening is his second answer. Hashenis, the second one is, Sheloi hoiso hakavono elo lenasos es hachachomim. The intention was merely to test the chachomim im yonichu hakabolo shebiyodom, as to whether they will give up the Kabbalah that is in their hands, the Hagemorah shebefihim, and the logic that is in their mouths, bishvil baskel v'imlav. Whether they're going to depart from their conclusions reached through Mesoris and Gemorah in favor of a baskel. It's a test. The Ribbono Shel Olam is trying them out. There are two ways of understanding Rabbeinu Haigon. The one is he might learn differently to the Ran. He might learn that the Bat Kol was wrong. It was just a test. It's difficult to learn like that. Number one, it's difficult to learn that a Bat Kol, a real genuine Bat Kol, would tell a lie. Would say something which is completely wrong just to test people out. It's true that there is such a concept that the Ribbono Shel Olam sometimes allows miracles to be done through witchcraft and magic, through koyach ha-tumah, through the powers of impurity and tumah, in order to try people out, in order to test them. That can happen. But Rabbi Eliezer brings a baskov in support of himself, is it going to be koyach ha-tumah? It would be very difficult to say that. Number two, his answer is Ein Mashgichin Bevaskol. That's all. We don't have to follow a Baskol. Since Matan Torah, we don't follow the Baskol. Again, implying that if the Torah had not been given, I would follow the Baskol. And certainly, according to the Ran, as we've learned, the Baskol was a holy Baskol, had Kedusha, it was true and it was accurate. And if that is the case, comes the question again, why do it? We discussed last week Nisyonis, what it is to have a Nisoyon, to have trials and tribulations, to have Yisurim, to have Tzoros. And we discussed the reasons that these things happen, and we learned to Ramban in last week's Sedra, where we need to understand that when trouble happens, it's not that the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing something to you. It's merely that the Ribbono Shel Olam has stopped doing something to you, that's all. Trouble should happen all the time. It's the protection of the Ribbono Shel Olam which keeps us away from it. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam removes his presence just a little bit, then we start feeling it, then we start suffering it. That's what the Ramban said when he was talking about this whole Indian of the Metzora, that it's the removal of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Hashgacha Pratis. It's a little bit of removal of the Ribbono Shel Olam. When a person is on an extremely high level of Kedusha, the Ramban said, his skin glows, and even the walls of his house glows, and his clothing glows, there's a certain aura about it. One's living in Eretz Yisrael and everything is 100%. If one does something wrong, one talks Lashon Hora, whatever reason it is that brings about the Negoim, says the Ramban, the Ribbono Shel Olam removes himself a little bit, removes the Hashgacha Pratis a little bit, and this dullness sets in. And we learned that in all Yisurim. That Yisurim is not that Hashem decides, now I'll do something, now I'll hurt him. All the Ribbono Shel Olam decides is, now I'll take a step back. Let's see what he does when he hasn't got me standing right next to him. And we discussed the different kinds of Yisurim. And we discussed where to look for the problem, and we discussed Yisurin Shel Ahava. And sometimes, just as when you're teaching a child to walk, and he's beginning to hobble along, and he's just getting onto his legs, and he puts out his arms to catch hold of your hands, and you take a step back. Nebuch, how can you do? How can you terrorize a little child like that? You're teaching him. That's Yisurin Shel Ahava. Sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam will take a step back so that we should take another step forward. And he'll take another step back so that we should take another step forward. When we've gone as far as we can go and he wants us to still go further, he'll create the opportunity for going further by moving a step away. And it will feel like Yisurim, it will feel like we're suffering. And all that's happening is there's a distance which needs to be bridged. What we have in this evening's shiur is an amazing concept. That there's no question that when the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a step back, it hurts. Whether it's Yisurim Shel Ahava, when he's doing it because he loves us, or he's just doing it because we've done something wrong, the Yisurim hurt, and we feel it immediately. And what when the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a step towards us? We would think, on the basis of last week's shiur, there can be nothing more magnificent than that. As much as it hurts when he moves away, the thrill, the elation, the warmth and the confidence that must be exuded when the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a step towards us. We see tonight, not necessarily so. What greater step can there be taken towards you than being told by the Ribbono Shel Olam that you're wrong? What can there be? It's coming close to levels of nevuah. It's coming close to levels of prophecy. A direct communication from the Ribbono Shel Olam with a basko that you're wrong. The decision you're about to take is incorrect. And look what a state of mind it throws one into. Do we accept that baskel with open arms? No, says Rabbi Yeshua. Lo b'shamayim. The nisoyon that there is, as Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon says, the trial and tribulation to stick to your own decision and not to be affected even by the Ribbono Shel Olam. What trial and tribulation? This concept is very difficult, and it worries me in shiurim like this, people when, who just come in and out to an occasional shiur. I don't think it's possible that such a concept can be grasped by those who haven't been coming to the shiur regularly. And although we'll probably have an opportunity to discuss it from different directions in the future and to clarify it, I wouldn't like people to go out with a half-baked understanding of this concept. But we see that there's a time when the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to stick to our own decisions. I'm not talking about us ordinary people, I'm talking about the Talmidei Chachomim who reach a decision al pi Torah. I'm talking about the Rabbi Yeshua and the Rabbi Eliezer. And they want us to stick to that. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to stick to that decision in the face of opposition from himself even. And the Gemara goes on to say later on that they met Eliyahu HaNavi and they asked him, what did the Ribbono Shel Olam do at that moment? And he smiled, and Eliyahu HaNavi said, the Ribbono Shel Olam laughed, he smiled, and he said, "Litzchuli bona, my children have been victorious over me." They're right. They made me abide by that decision I made when I took Emes and I threw it down to the earth. And I undertook to obligate ourselves to the decisions of Beis Din. They made me stand by that. And he had nachas from it. The extent of clarity that there needs to be in our thinking is amazing. Sometimes one thinks something through and one's sure that one is right. It can be a halachic question, it can be a hashkofadika question, it can be a matter of attitudes, it can be something in one's day to day life. One thinks it through, one believes one is right. And then one starts discussing it with people around and about, and everybody says different. It shakes one up. One loses confidence. And very often, one lands up doing as everybody says one should do. And the people we ask are not always experts. Very often the opinions we take are the opinions of the street. Sometimes, in marital problems, when there's a Bein Ish L'Ishto, when a husband and wife are experiencing a problem in their marriage, it is unbelievable who they go to discuss those problems with. If they systematically set out to find the most incompetent and unqualified people to pass an opinion, those are the ones they go to. They ask friends and they ask neighbors and they ask interferers and interferers and they ask parents and parents-in-law. All sorts of people that involve themselves in the whole thing and can't see the wood for the trees. And very often the husband asks one and the wife asks others. And what does it do? They get different answers and it makes the machlokes even worse. We're tremendously affected by what others think and by what others say. I'm not even talking if bus calls would come. I mean, then you can imagine we would lose our individuality altogether. Nobody would do anything. I'm talking about society. Gornits, nobodies. Unqualified, incompetent nobodies passing opinion on matters that are far beyond their experience and their intellect. And we worry about it. We take decisions on the basis of where to send our children to school and what people say. What we do and what we don't do on the basis of what people say. What we study and what we don't study on the basis of what people say. We're tremendously affected by what people say around the table, in the street. A balabos will invite us to a meal and we'll come and he'll pass an opinion and will shake us. Absolutely shake us. Because it's different to what we've heard. It's different to what we've thought out. And chas v'sholom, the next week we should go to another balabos and hear the same thing the first balabos said. Then we're flat and finished. We can't tolerate the possibility that people hold differently. What is the defense? Says Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, the test was to see im yanichu hakabolo shebeyodom v'hagemoro shebefihem. What he wanted to test was, are they going to depart from two things? And these are the two things which make up accurate and confident halachic decisions. Kabbalah shebeyodom, the mesoris, the tradition which is in their hand, and the gemara, the logic, the svaras shebefiim, which is in their mouths. I want to first of all note the difference between what's in your hand and what's in your mouth. What's in your hand is a tool. The things that you use are the tools. Where do you get your tools from? Somebody must give them to you. They come externally. You can't make tools from yourself. You know, in the 1960s, when everybody was on an existentialist trip, and everything must be from within yourself and subjective and existential. How do you? You've got to cut a piece of wood with a saw. How do you do it existentially? What do you do? There's no existentialism. You go to the hardware shop and you buy a saw and you cut the wood. That's the only way you can do it. You need a saw in your hand. Without that, you can't cut the wood. Kabbalah is a tool. It's something which is given to you from outside. It can't come from inside. It's in your hand. Svara comes from inside. After one has been trained in Torah logic, after one's mind has been straightened in Torah logic, after, as Rav Ezrahi talked earlier, one's heart has been knocked into shape using Torah methods, and one's whole personality is the personality of the Torah, and one's mind is the mind of the Torah, and one's opinions are the opinions of the Torah, and one's logic is the logic of the Torah, then you take a combination of one's own unique personal internal logic with the strict rigors of the tradition of the Kabbalah, of the tools, the objective true tools which are handed down, and together one can reach a decision. And with those two, there's nothing to fear. If one knows where it comes from, if one knows what its origin is, if one knows the source, what's there to fear? What's there to get shaken up about? So others hold differently? Doesn't matter. We ourselves, let's put it this way, in the shiur there are two things that need to be learnt. The one is a pure philosophic question which bothers a lot of people, and that needs to be straightened out. That is, Abaya says this, and Rabbah says this, Beis Hillel says this, Beis Shammai says this. Who's right? Can't both be right? That's the one thing. The understanding of how a machlokes works, the understanding of the relationship of a psak halacha to an objective emes, and the decision of the Ribbono Shel Olam that emes is going to develop out of the world using the rules, using the Kabbalah, using the Torah of Shamayim, of heaven. Second thing is the practicalities of the Lamaisa. I think, I don't know all of you sitting here, but I think those of you that I know are not very likely to encounter bus calls. You're not likely to find that you've thought up something and there's a heavenly voice that tells you you're wrong. If you do, however, if it should happen that you do, please go straight to your nearest psychiatrist and have yourself checked up. That's not what the shiur is about. We're not worried about bus calls. But we are worried on our level about the things that influence us the way a baskel influenced them. A baskel was Kedusha. A baskel emanated from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. They faced the nisyonos of having to stand up for their emes, to stand up for their decisions in the face of emes. In the face of truth they had to stand up for it. And they had to subject God's truth to their truth, because that's what God wants. That's what they had to do. Thank goodness we don't have to do that kind of thing, because we wouldn't stand a chance. All we have to do is stand up for emes in the face of sheker. We just have to stand up for truth in the face of lies, and even that we can't do. We have to stand up for truth in the face of things which are wrong, which are crooked, which are degenerate, which are destructive, and even that we have difficulty doing. We tremble as soon as it goes around, as soon as there are a few people saying something, as sheker as it is, as bad as it is, as destructive as it is, it shakes the foundations of our trust, of our belief, of our straight thinking, of our commitment. That's what it does. And many of us are at the stage, Baruch Hashem, where we don't have to worry about what's said outside of the world of Torah so much. I said last night, we're not at the stage where we have to worry that much about what's said in the secular world. That's going to shake us up. That also at times, but that's not the main thing that we're worried about. What we do have to watch out for is even within religious circles. We're dealing in a society where the majority of religious people in this town are new at the game. That's Halbatzor. We're dealing with a much worse phenomenon, where the big majority, are people who are not being mekabel Torah with the Mesoris, who are not receiving Torah with the Masoris, not because they don't have teachers. That's not the problem. But there's a certain art in being a student as well. There's a certain art in being a Talmud. There's a certain art in receiving, in knowing how to receive. And we're dealing with a generation who hasn't got a clue to how to be Mekabel, how to receive something, how to latch on to a line of Masoris, to a line of tradition, how to find it and hold on to it for dear life, to integrate it, to understand it, to become part of it, and to achieve that kind of confidence which Rabbeinu Nissim Goren is talking about, to allow their minds to be developed, that the Gemara, that the Svara, that the logic should be straight, to allow themselves to be knocked into shape. You can't develop straight Gemara if you come to a shir once a week. You can't develop straight Svara if you come to a shir twice or three times a week. You can develop straight Svara if you come to a shir every day. And if you come to a shir every day, but every now and then you miss a shir, you also can't develop straight Svara. That's not possible. You're just getting somewhere and you miss the main point, and it makes everything crumb that you've been learning, because one little thing is missing. And you go away with a false picture of the whole Tosfos, of the whole Gemara, of the whole Rashi, whatever it is that we're learning. Can't do it that way. Needs Mesiris Nefesh. That needs the willingness to put everything aside, and if that's what I'm doing, that's what I'm doing. One can't be Mekabel, a Mesiris, if one hops around like a butterfly, like a gypsy, as we've been discussing, a shir here, and a shir there, a shir from this one, a shir from that one, until one's a great, great Talmid Chochem. One can't do it like that. One is to find a Rebbe that one sits by for many years, then one might go to another Rebbe for many years, as long as it's all in the same derech as we've been discussing today, as long as it's all along the same line, the one Rebbe sends to another and he sends to another, and so they go up. That can be. You can't get it by being a butterfly here and there and everywhere. That way you can't get a Mesiris. It needs Mesiris Nefesh. It needs dedicating oneself to it. One can't do it filachayad. One can't do it as a part-time sort of thing that one will drop into a shir occasionally and expect to get a Mesiris. So we're dealing with a city, we're dealing with a society where the majority, ruba de ruba, of frum Jews today have no Mesiris. If you say to them, where does your tradition come from? Where does your line come from? Who are you Mekabel from? Whose approach do you have? Have you acquired somebody's approach? Well, yes, I go to so-and-so, I go to so-and-so, I go to very shiri. That's not the answer. And we are shaken by their opinions. We get shaken up by things that they say. We start questioning and wondering because somebody who doesn't have a Mesiris says something which has no foundation. It might even be something you heard from somebody else. It doesn't matter. If he hasn't got a Mesiris, he doesn't understand what he heard even. And it bothers us. That not, says Rabbeinu Nissim Goren, it's a Nisoyan to see. If the Gemara, if the Kabbalah Shebeyodoi and the Gemara Shebefiim, the logic which is in the Kabbalah, the tradition which they've been given into their hands by their Rabbein, plus the logic which they've developed in their minds and hearts, to see if even with the revelation of truth they are prepared to depart from that. When Rabbeinu Shlom says, Mitzchuni Banai, they've won! When he sees that despite his own revelation, despite taking a step further to them, not away from them, revealing himself to them, not hiding himself from them, showing them the real emes, but an emes different to the one they're meant to reach by using the Torah and using halacha, they're able to stand absolutely firm in his face. And then he knows that it's secure. Then he knows that the Torah is in the hands of people who are unmovable, people who are straight, people who are committed, people who are confident and secure in their Kabbalah, and people who are knowledgeable, wise and brilliant in their Svara, so that with the brilliance of the Svara and the anchorage of the Kabbalah, the Torah remains in safe hands to be passed down from generation to generation.